This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games or whenever my favorite team is playing late. Five-hour energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts.
Mark Reardon.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
Mark Reardon.
There's all these new words that are just meant to keep one person from disagreeing with another person's position.
And you have to be pithy. What do I mean by pithy? How about this? Republicans want to kill your kids.
This is the Mark Reardon Show.
I can't wait until American women can't get blueberries for their smoothies.
I don't know. I just felt like I had to throw that in. You know what's funny about that soundbite is it's hard to believe that that's real, but that was real from a woman on CNN. How the blueberries shaken out for American women. That's what I want to know. Good afternoon, St. Louis. Good afternoon to Sue Thomas in the Hall of Famer, and Ethan is in here as well. How we doing?
Great.
Great. Peachy, peachy.
Beautiful weather. Hey, by the way, what's the weather like in Japan? Fred, it's not too early,
Fred,
to start checking this out because you leave this weekend.
Yeah, I think they're saying it's in the 40s and 50s.
Okay, well, we're not gonna do an I think they're saying. We're going to look here. What city are you going to?
We're going to start in Tokyo.
Okay, well, that's what I thought. I didn't want to, let's see, Tokyo, Japan.
Weather
there. Here we go. Right now it's 47 degrees, but it's in the overnight hours. Let's look at daily here for your first day would be Monday, right? 57, looks pretty nice.
That's
50
nice.
On Tuesday. Going to dip down, a little rain on Wednesday. You know what's going to come in handy then? Your new rain.
You're right.
Oh, my goodness. See, look at that. It's going to hit next Wednesday. You're going to need that damn thing, Fred, so just remember that.
All right, good deal.
It will be
That's
exciting.
Great.
We're actually mapping out strategy so the host doesn't freak out next week, and so Ethan
good.
Doesn't freak out
it's
when people
okay.
are here.
It's going to be okay.
Because let's face it, the person who takes the brunt of all that is Sue sitting next to me when I'm in a bad mood, so we're going to try to avoid that right now. Fred, I'm adding to the list, though. Like, I've thought of a couple of people that maybe, like, Andrew Bailey hasn't been on just a little bit. We'll reach out to him, but I got a bunch of people who we'll hook up with here over the next couple of weeks. And I talked to Dwayne Patterson from hotair.com. So people will be called into service here on this show. And the reason I bring all this up is because Fred's the person that manages all of this. He books the show. He holds it together. He keeps me in check. All of these things. So when he's not here, it doesn't go as well, typically.
I've become obsessed with Tokyo weather, so I'm going to have to let you two speak about things while I look that there's going to be heavy rain on Wednesday.
Yeah, it does look like heavy rain.
All
and then
right.
what about here? Because we're going to have Dave Murray join us a little after 4 o'clock. We have another situation where these winds, we have a wind advisory. I think it kicks in at 6 a.m. tomorrow. They're talking maybe 40-mile-per-hour gusts, 40 to 50-mile-per-hour gusts, and not a very nice day after this. And I think it cools off a little bit for the weekend, but we'll have Dave check in with us here at the start of the hour. As we get rolling here this afternoon, I'm going to start with something a little different just because it's crazy. Oh, Fred, do me a favor. Tell Ethan that I want the audio from that because it looks like there's developments in that. Ethan, if you're listening, I want the track runner from a couple of days ago. What was I saying, Sue? I was going to say something here.
You were going to start with a really shocking story.
Hey, by the way, the wind advisory starts at noon tomorrow.
So I lied about that.
And then
right
goes
off the
to
bat.
Friday at 1 a.m.
Okay. Okay. So what I was saying there was not true, right?
You are fake news.
That's all right. Thanks for. Sorry. I think I said I think, right? I'm like, I think it starts. I was wrong. It was off by 6 hours. The story that Fred guided me into, I'll explain this because this is crazy. And I didn't hear about it until like 15 minutes ago, and we have some good audio from this. But let me just kind of put the show out for today and mention the fish fry tomorrow. We're going to be in Cottleville at the Knights of Columbus Hall. That's going to be a lot of fun. It's the second stop on our tour. We would love to see you there. This is an awesome fish fry. We've been there now, I think, both years. On the roundtable tomorrow, Jane will be here. This is a big day, by the way. The governor was in town. He signed this new bill to create a police commission in St. Louis. The mayor, whoever that might be, will be one member and then five that will be appointed by the governor. You think he'll appoint me, Fred? I'm wondering.
Why
I might
don't
have
you
a choice
ask
on
him
that.
When we have him on the air Monday?
Yeah,
that's a great idea.
Don't you think? Oh, you know what, though? I don't live in the city.
Oh, yeah.
Damn it. Nah, I don't think it could
except
be.
For that.
Jane, though. Jane could be on that thing. Wouldn't that be crazy?
Yes, it would.
Well, she represents the cops, though, so I think there might be a little bit of a conflict of interest. Anyway, former State Senator Jeff Smith will be here, and current State Senator Nick Schroer. All the fun stuff in the 4 o'clock hour with Paul Hall and Cusimano. My friend Chris Smith, and we've chronicled Chris's, not only his devastating story when he was shot in the head and the woman he was with died 3.5 years ago in Farmersville, but his recovery in 48 hours did a great story. He's got a book coming out this summer, so he's going to join us, and we're going to be joined by Steve Ellman, the executive of St. Charles County as well. We have some stuff coming up here on the Department of Education with Neil McCluskey from Cato. We're going to cover that. I'm really excited to get Madeline Kearns on this afternoon because she wrote about this crazy story where this elderly grandma was arrested by the free speech police, or not the free speech, it's just the speech police in Scotland. We'll get to that. Jane is going to join us with an update on the crime bill and a couple other things, and then we have stuff in the 5 o'clock hour on the bird flu and audio cut of the day. Dan Reardon joined us yesterday. He's going to have an update on the players this afternoon. But how about this story? Do you want to set this one up, Fred? Because has this been getting a lot of coverage today?
No, not a lot at all. They're in Connecticut. A man was held captive in his own home for more than 20 years by his stepmother.
I tell you what,
Have you heard about this?
I did. And the story was, did you see this part, Fred, that they said that when he went to elementary school, the principal there and teachers were concerned and had been calling the authorities about it, but nothing ever happened.
Wow.
And then he was left there for even more time.
So he was 11 years old, and he's 32.
Horrible.
I guess he set a fire in his bedroom to escape. But here's the police chief in Waterbury, Connecticut.
33 years of law enforcement, this is the worst treatment of humanity that I've ever witnessed. It's really hard to talk about still. I mean, it's shuddering to think that someone would treat any person, let alone a family member or someone that was entrusted as a guardian or a parental figure in this way. There's some physical evidence that was seized from the house that does corroborate the fact that that room did have exterior locks on it and a number of different styles of exterior locks, as was explained during an interview with the victim throughout the years. He's got a lot of mental health issues that he has to deal with at this point in time. There are a lot of physical conditions that he's working on as well. I mean, here's an adult that was 5'9" and 68 pounds. Some apparent orthopedic issues. The room was very small. When I read about it and talk to the investigators and overlook the interviews, it was worse than the conditions of a jail cell.
I'm 5'9", I weigh 168. So that guy weighed 100 pounds less than me. And I don't have much on my bones. That is unbelievable. How could something like that even happen?
For that long.
For that long. I mean, it's stunning if it would even happen for 6 months or a shorter period of time. So, yeah, that's crazy.
The attorneys for the stepmom, who is, I guess, alleged to have done it, are denying
it. She didn't do it, of course, Fred.
Where was the dad? That's the part I don't know. I'll have to dig that. Okay.
I do not know that part. All right. I want to go. You know, I'm going to do something here, and I'll probably lose you and Fred because you might not have been a part of this world. But I remembered this because I had a piece of, it wasn't necessarily, you know, like snail mail, but somebody hit me on Messenger who couldn't find my email address. So it was kind of like a piece of mail. So I wanted to use this.
Here's the mail, it never fails. It makes me wanna wag my tail. When it comes, I wanna will.
Yep, mail. Yeah, that's from Blue's Clues. Although that's not the original Steve, and I'm kind of old school on Blue's Clues.
Me
I
too.
Like the original Steve.
The original Steve.
So you remember the original Steve because of your kids when they were younger, right?
Right.
And Fred's boys are about the same age as exactly. my kids. Did you ever watch Blue's Clues, Sue?
I did not.
It was a pretty good show back in the day.
But, I mean, you could go places and see it. I just would not know.
But if you didn't have little kids at the time, you might not. But here's the – I wanted to address this because I was a little confused by the point. But let's see if we can hash it out here this afternoon. Mark, longtime listener to your show, couldn't locate an email on 97.1. That's fascinating
That's
to me.
Good.
Do we not have something on our website that just guides me or guides people into my email?
Let me go look.
Okay, all you have to do is here. This is going to make it simple for you, although you probably spell the name wrong, because Cox spells his name with a C. M-A-R-K dot Reardon, R-E-A-R-D-O-N, at Odyssey.com. No one's going to remember that, right, friend?
Well, Odyssey's the hard word.
Yeah.
It is, because people will spell it with an O. Like,
O-Y, you know. No, it's A-U-D-A-C-Y. So it's mark.reardon at Odyssey.com. But if you want to hit me on Messenger, that's fine, too. This is what this guy did. So we did Telephone Tuesdays on Tuesday. I missed this because I don't always check Messenger, but this is from yesterday. Yesterday, he says, you responded to a listener when she shared that she wanted indictments with all that Doge is uncovering. Your response was, that's just the way government operates, and you aren't sure anything illegal has taken place. Now, this person said, I was floored by that statement. With the billions upon billions funneling through thousands of NGOs and the level of corruption that goes with that, it's not a leap to think there is tremendous thievering taking place. The wealth of our elected officials built while serving in their roles, and it goes on and on and on. I'm really disappointed in your statement and stunned that you could make such a remark. Let me just address that tone. Oh, my God, that's a bit of an overreaction to something I said to a caller, but let me explain myself. And this is what I said to the dude who messaged me. Has Elon or President Trump talked about indictments here? That's rhetorical. They have not. Now, am I ruling out corruption that could lead to arrests or indictments? I'm not, and I don't think I did. I don't even remember the call the other day. But what I would say is, this money... Here, I'll do it this way. Let me back up. Who would you charge with a crime? If there are crimes that are committed here, who would you charge with a crime? Congress? We can't do that, right? Congress okayed this money. It was appropriated. It wasn't appropriated through the proper channels, which Republicans are trying to... you know, address this so these things are voted on and you can't tack a bunch of amendments on. But Congress appropriated the money. The money is sent to all these NGOs. The NGOs spend the money. Is it, you know, fishy? Sure. Is it corrupt? Yeah. But were there indictments? Are there indictments? No one's even talking about this. Is someone talking about indictments?
No, I haven't
heard.
So that's why, you know how I get sometimes with the reaction. But I was really disappointed and stunned that I can make a remark. It was just kind of common sense. There's nobody talking about indictments. I'd be fine if there's some proof a U.S. attorney, you know, uncovers something that might be criminal. That's fine with me. But I don't even think anyone's talking about that right now. So I just wanted to address that because I thought it was very odd. One thing that just happened, and this is, well, you know what? I have my sounder here. Let's use it, damn it.
And now, this Doge update.
I mean, whoa.
On the Mark Reardon Show.
Yeah, so this is not the best update here this afternoon, unfortunately, because you had a judge in California that has ordered at least six agencies must rehire the fired probationary employees. So here's the story. This just came out a short time ago. A federal judge in California ordered the Departments of Veterans Affairs, Defense, Energy, Interior, Agriculture, and Treasury to reinstate thousands of probationary employees who were terminated last month. The departments must offer reinstatement to any and all probationary employees terminated on or about February 13th. This is according to U.S. District Judge William Alsip. It's a sad, sad day, he said, when our government would fire some good employee and say it was based on performance when they know good and well that's a lie. That's what the judge said. He added, there's nothing wrong with reductions in force if it's done correctly under the law. So I guess this gets a little technical And I'm not exactly sure how this is going to end, but there is a feeling that, you know, this is a California judge, probably a liberal judge, but that might not matter. There are things within the law here that might not work out for Doge. So we'll see. You have to tell people why they're, I guess you can fire someone for performance. And my understanding, the way this was explained about a month ago, is that the reason that they weren't, you know, chopping off a bunch of other people is because the probationary employees were the ones that they were allowed to let go. Now they, I guess, are saying other things. It looks like this has been reversed, and maybe they have to find another way to get a reduction in force. So that would kind of put us in a situation where maybe Doge wasn't quite as successful here in the beginning stages as we thought, right? I don't know. I'm not exactly sure what to make of that. But it does seem like it's going to be peeled back, at least on this one judge's ruling here this afternoon. Have you heard anything? You know, this has gone back and forth, too. A lot of the people in the legacy media that are not happy with Doge and Elon are saying that there's not support across the country. So Quinnipiac has a new poll out today about the economy and about President Trump. And the numbers aren't particularly good. Here's what they say about Doge. 60% of voters disapprove. But you're going to hear some minutiae here, so bear with me here. 60% of voters disapprove of the way Elon Musk and the Department of Government Efficiency are dealing with workers employed by the federal government. 36% approve. But there's a huge partisan divide. Take a stab here. How many Republicans approve versus don't approve? You want to take a stab at that number?
You mean percentage-wise? Mm-hmm,
percentage-wise. So
I would say, go ahead, Fred.
I'm going to say 70-30.
That's really close.
80-20?
That's even closer. 77-16.
Wow.
Now, Democrats. Okay, how many Democrats approve versus disapprove?
80-20.
That's a good guess.
Or 20-80.
The opposite.
This is crazy. 96-2. 96-2? There's a couple missing there, but that might be undecided. But that's, so think about that, because what Quinnipiac said, and I just repeated that line a couple of minutes ago, is there is a wide partisan divide. That is a huge gap.
Wow.
77% of Republicans say, yeah, cool, roll with it. We like Doge. 96% of Democrats say no. Why would that be? Okay. Let's offer, just for argument's sake here, a little flexibility on both sides. Maybe there's some people on the Republican side. I can see that they're not happy with the way that they're going after the federal workforce. There might even be some people on the Republican side that say, look, if we're really going to cut government spending, we have to go after the entitlement programs, right? Which is true. I don't know how many people think that through. But on the other side, 96% of Democrats surveyed, like, that's all of them, right? It's pretty much all of them.
Yeah.
A couple that did. They say cutting government waste, fraud, efficiency, that's a bad thing. I don't understand that at all.
But that's not how they look at it.
Well, yeah.
That's the whole thing.
Now they look at it. Well, how do they look at it? And here's what I would say about the way that they look at it. It's through the lens of the legacy media. It's CNN, it's NPR, it's the newspaper. I mean, you can just open up, and I do this every morning. I look at the Wall Street Journal, I look at the New York Times, the LA Times, the Washington Post. There's not very, outside the Wall Street Journal, and the Wall Street Journal's been hitting Trump on the tariff stuff, right? There's not a lot of positive coverage about anything that he's doing related to Doge in particular, because what they do is they focus on the supposed victims. The real victims are the American taxpayers,
yes,
if we're being honest. But they want to go and they want to tell each individual story about someone who doesn't have a job. And that's how they communicate the message.
Or are they looking at it through the lens of Trump derangement syndrome?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of both on that front. So what did he do today? He did answer some questions, Trump, on a variety of things. Oh, was this... Did he wear the shamrock?
That was yesterday, maybe Wednesday, when the Irish prime minister
was in town. That's right. We missed this yesterday. I guess I missed this. But the Irish prime minister was in there, and J.D. Vance had some cool socks on.
And by the way, I have to speak of inflation. I love these socks. What's with these socks?
It's in honor of the T-shirt.
I'm trying to stay focused, but I'm very impressed with the VP's socks.
Yeah, those are pretty cool socks. I don't know if Trump could pull anything like that off. All right, we're off and running here. It's a Thursday edition. Fish Fry Friday is tomorrow. Don't forget about Brian Kilmeade a week from Saturday. Get VIP tickets at briankilmeade.com.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover, all for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code SHAVE at checkout. That's harrys.com, code SHAVE. Enjoy.
Think warm. Think palm trees. Think baseball. Hi, I'm MLB.com's Matt Monaghan. The long, dark freeze is over and spring training is finally here. If you're a baseball fan looking for a quick, easy way to get all the scores, top stories, and best sound bites from Florida and Arizona, you're in luck.
I don't think people realize how good we are. I don't even know if we realize how good.
The Morning Lineup Podcast, a short, less than 10-minute baseball highlight show, is available anywhere on any platform you listen to podcasts on, 5 days a week. We can't wait to meet you there.
Hey, I would say even if Cottleville is not in your neck of the woods, come on out and see us tomorrow at the Knights of Columbus Hall. It's going to be awesome. We have some listeners checking in with me about the future dates. We got Assumption in South County next Friday, Queen of All Saints the week following, St. Mary Magdalene. That's a new one for us on the stop.
Yeah.
On the 4th of April in Ott's Tavern in Millstadt, Illinois on the 11th.
Cottleville has that good fried shrimp. Jane loves the hush puppies. Oh, the fried shrimp. I'm thinking about it right now.
Man, I'm still going back to that po' boy from last week for sure.
Delicious.
Well, I feel like, you know, when we talk about Doge, I always have to play my sounder here. Don't I?
And now, this Doge update.
Yeah.
I mean, whoa.
On the Mark Reardon Show.
I like that. I like that a lot. Neil McCluskey is with us. He's the director of Cato Institute Center for Educational Freedom. We're going to talk a little bit about the Department of Education, whether it's realistic to peel that back, and some other things related to Doge. Neil has also written a book called The Fractured Schoolhouse, Reexamining Education for a Free, Equal, and Harmonious Society. How are you, Neil? Welcome to 97.1 FM Talk in St. Louis.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing okay this afternoon. We have a beautiful, beautiful day here, and we're fans of Doge here on this radio station, and I'm certainly a fan. But let me kind of start here with the Department of Education. You wrote a book about this. You know, we're in a situation here where I feel very strongly that we're not addressing this learning loss issue from the pandemic. There's so many things out there that don't get discussed, and you have a Department of Education that's supposed to maybe focus on some of these things, and in, I think, a lot of people's view, they spend a lot of money that doesn't have ROI. So what would you say overall about the idea to get rid of the Department of Education?
No, I think it's absolutely the right idea to get rid of the Department of Education. For one thing, it's unconstitutional. So the Constitution gives the federal government specific enumerated powers. They're the only ones it has. And education's not among them. So it shouldn't be doing anything in education, much less having a Department of Education, a cabinet level department. So for that reason alone, it should go. But we also have no evidence that it's done any good educationally. What we see is it basically sucks up taxpayer money, bundles it with some red tape, and then returns the remains after they pay themselves back to states and districts, and that's not productive for anybody.
No, it's kind of a money laundering operation, isn't it? And I agree with you. And, you know, the thing that I like to remind people of, I moved here to St. Louis when I was 14, 1979. That was the year that they created the Department of Education. So it hasn't been around really that long, but it's one of those things when you say that, Neil, you know this, to the average person who's not dialed into what's going on, they think like, oh my gosh, why would you cut a department that is dedicated to education, right?
Yeah, I mean, we hear that all the time, and it makes it easy to kind of demagogue keeping it because, like, well, it's about education, and education is good, and don't we want the federal government to be doing things that are good? But it doesn't actually educate anyone. You know, it's not like the military where they actually go out and they do things like fight the wars. It's a bureaucracy. It's money exchange. It has nothing to do with actually teaching people. And bureaucracy tends to have kind of a bad connotation because it's slow to move and it wastes a lot of money. And that's what the Department of Education is. So just because it has education in the name doesn't mean it's educating people.
The constitutional point is very, very important as well, because, you know, and I'm open to rooting out wasteful spending in whatever department. But a lot of folks, and you've probably noticed this in the legacy media on the left, their talking point is, well, you better go after defense. And I'm fine with that if you want to look at some things in the Department of Defense. But unlike the Department of Education, the Department of Defense is constitutionally required. That is a constitutional mandate. So there's a significant difference there, isn't there?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Department of Defense should exist because we have a defense job, maybe the most important of federal jobs. There is no constitutional authorization for the department or for the federal government to be in education. So there absolutely should not be a Department of Education.
So, Neil, how practical, if you're going to try to dismantle this thing, would it be? You indicate in what you wrote at Cato is that the spending actually constitutes a small part of all education funding, but they dole out money from formula grants, discretionary grants, direct funding, and administrative funding. I don't know if you want to get into some of the math there and how that would work, but if Trump decides, and I think he wants to do this, if Linda McMahon decides to go for it, I think Congress might have to weigh in on this one. Would it be too difficult to manage and to execute?
Well, if we're talking about what they're talking about, which is kind of dismantling the department, just moving parts to other places, at least theoretically, that's not that hard. And we have to remember the Department of Education, before it existed, there was an Office of Education in the old Department of Health, Education, and Welfare. So things had to be moved to put it together, and things could be moved to take it apart. And places that these things would go actually tend to make more sense. So moving the whole federal student aid, which is primarily student loan operation, to the Department of the Treasury or the Small Business Administration makes sense, because that's where people are who are accustomed to running financial operations, which is what student loans are. It makes sense to move Indian education components to the Department of the Interior. It makes sense to move the Office of Civil Rights to the Department of Justice. So those places are already kind of in the spaces where those places would go. So I think you can move it in probably a year. It would obviously require some planning, but there's no reason it couldn't happen fairly quickly.
So the estimate here of the savings, if you would eliminate these things, would be $94.6 billion. And as you indicate, that's the fiscal year 2025 budget of the entire state of Michigan.
Yeah. So while the federal government doesn't spend a large percentage or provide a large percentage of overall education spending, that's because in part we spend a huge amount on education, especially when you include a higher education. And so if you were to get rid of almost everything the department does, it's still a pretty big amount of money. And it does vary from year to year, and it's difficult sometimes to really capture the budget because student loans have a lot of sort of intricate and confusing budgeting. But you could certainly save what to most people would be a large amount of money. And even if it's small relative to what the federal government spends overall, there are all sorts of small things end up adding up.
So I'm not going to argue that the Department of Education does any of this, because I don't think they do. But how do you then, because this is your, you know, wheelhouse, education, how do you maybe try to focus in on some of these devastating things that have happened to these kids in the aftermath of the pandemic?
Well, the federal government isn't doing any of that. I mean, they pile money into schools, and what we see was schools were trying to figure out in school district, what do we do with it? What we need to do is go back to knowing clearly who has responsibility. And in education, if we're talking about public education, it is states, unless states want to give the responsibility to school districts. But once we know who we can say is responsible, then that's where the money should go, and they concentrate on how it's used, and they're held responsible if it doesn't work. Now, in public schools, that means, well, you vote out the school board or somebody if they don't get things done. Far more important at the state level is you go to school choice, where actually schools have to earn the money of parents because the money's attached to their kids. But if you're not going to go to that, it's still better you have true state or true local control and not say, oh, well, ask the federal government to give us money. And then since it's not really ours, we don't really have to focus on whether it's used effectively. And so we've got to return control to where the people actually are, not a whole bunch of money comes from a place far distant that actually is not responsible for the thing it's funding.
By the way, in Missouri, I think we're making some pretty good progress on some school choice issues in our legislature. I don't know if you track that at all, but we have guests here from our local delegation that's on all the time, and I think we've had a fair level of success. One of the things that I always offer, you know, as an example, and I don't know how you, you know, really manage this, but I'm friends with a woman who used to be here in St. Louis, Neil. She was the superintendent of the Jennings School District. It's an area that's probably more impoverished, certainly, than a lot of the areas around St. Louis and in North County. And she went to Wichita, so she's not here anymore. But Tiffany Anderson was someone who really led by example. She was there in the crosswalks every morning when the kids were coming to school. She talked to the parents. She wanted to make sure that she was dialed into things that were happening with the students. She wouldn't sit in meetings. So she's always been like my model for unbelievable leadership. And by the way, she did a lot of these things, and she turned the school district around with very little money. I mean, you know, that, and she even indicated to me that it's kind of backwards the way that they dole out the money, because the more success you have, you're almost punished for that. But I don't know how you get to better leadership in schools because of the teachers' union control, because that certainly is something that can, I think, make a big difference in these kids' lives. But we don't have enough Tiffany Andersons, is what I would say, Neil.
Yeah, well, if you don't fundamentally change education from top down to bottom up, bottom-up meaning the families that you're supposed to be serving control the money, it's very hard to get the schools to be controlled or focused on what is it that we need to provide. What is it kids need? We need to focus on what parents demand, which is presumably good education. If it's top-down, there's always going to be outsized power for organized special interests like teachers' unions, and it makes it hard for any kind of superintendent or someone to a really good superintendent to have control and to keep control. And even sort of the idea of you've got democratically controlled school districts and you have school boards where people debate things, you know, that is not necessarily the most efficient way to run anything. It doesn't give clear ownership. And I think we, unless we move to school choice fundamentally bottom up, it's going to be hard to make sure that those exceptions, those really great leaders, end up being the norm. Because now it's really hard to be a real leader in a system where all the power is with other people, and they may not want what that leader wants. They may want to just sort of be left alone, which is totally normal, by the way. I mean, most people would like to have a job where they do what they want.
Well, that's a valid point, and certainly I think Tiffany was the outlier on that. Neil, I appreciate you coming on here, talking about this. I have, you know, again, we've made some progress here. I've been talking about school choice since my days in Milwaukee. I left there about 20 years ago. There was some success even in the mid-2000s in Milwaukee in a school choice program, but I just feel like decades keep going by, and this doesn't really solidify into something that would be, you know, on a wider scale. We're certainly trying, and maybe this administration is going to get there a little bit further than others.
Well, it's the most concerted effort I've seen to get rid of the Department of Education. We have concerted efforts everywhere now for school choice. So, I mean, I don't know if the department's going away, but I do see good stuff going on in education, more than I would say we saw 10 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. Neil McCluskey from Cato, thank you so much for joining me this afternoon.
Thank you.
All right, appreciate it. I have on the topic of education, Sue, I have a parent-teacher conference that I have to go to tonight. Those are always interesting, right? I keep teasing my daughter that she might have to repeat fourth grade since she's taking an extra spring break over the course of the next two
weeks. Oh, I'm sure that's going over
Yeah, for
well.
Those people who missed that story, so the Rockwood spring break is next week. I decided to do something really special for my family, my wife and my daughter. I bought them a cruise for spring break, but the problem is I booked it for the wrong week, so they get to go on the cruise anyway. Alexa gets 2 weeks of spring break. I'm going to check with her teacher just to see if she has to repeat fourth grade. We'll keep you posted on that tomorrow. I can't bear to hear you cry. Fish Fry Friday is tomorrow. Again, our second stop, this one in Cottleville at the Knights of Columbus. So, you know, I mentioned Chris Smith's going to be a guest tomorrow on the 5 o'clock hour. He texted and said, we're not going to be in a tent tomorrow. I'm like, I don't think so. A tent would be a bad idea with high winds like that. There are a couple that we've done where we've kind of been outside.
Yeah.
Not the one in Cottleville, but remember we went to O'Fallon.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And it was nice that
really
day.
It really was.
It was really cool. That's when we had, remember,
we had
the veteran.
We had the
But we had the veteran
dogs.
That came in. I can't remember his name, and he passed
he
away,
was so
remember?
Wonderful, yep.
He was a fighter pilot in World War II. That was amazing. All right, so earlier this week, and I think a lot of people out there have probably seen the video of this, you had a high school sprinter in Virginia. And if you see the video of this, I mean, this chick is trying to defend herself, but she's running.
She can't.
She's losing, and it appears as if, and the reason it appears as if is because it was as if she was smacking her opponent on the back of the head with a baton. And here's something I just noticed, Sue. The reason I bring this up today is because she's now been charged with assault.
Well,
and
good.
I agree. I'll get to that in a second. But in the New York Post, they actually have a lip reader who's trying to weigh in here.
Oh, that's funny.
Let's see. I guess they say this doesn't really offer you that much information. While the speed at which the girls were running and the distance the camera away from the track hampered the audio and video quality, one expert believes she figured out what Everett said. Get off and hey-o. Okay, well, that doesn't really...
Hey-o?
Yeah, I don't know. That doesn't really do anything. But here's... Let me play you what the victim says and what the girl who's now been charged with a crime. She keeps doing interviews out there. I think she was even on... you know, Good Morning America, essentially denying that she did anything wrong. So here's what the victim, the girl that got whacked in the head, said.
In the video, Everett is seen on the inside track running the 4x200 relay at the Virginia State High School League Championships when junior Kaylin Tucker came around the outside on the corner.
That's when she hit me with the baton. I just felt a bang on my head, and then I fell off the track immediately.
Kaylin dropping her baton and reaching for her head. She was later diagnosed with a concussion.
Yeah, so she got whacked in the head.
Good
but
grief.
Here's the thing. I'm trying to figure out. Alila Everett is her name. She's a high school senior in Virginia. She claims that she lost her balance and accidentally hit the other girl while she was pumping her arms. Now, there's some legitimacy to the fact that you could lose your balance and have your arms flailing in a race like this. The problem is, not what happened. Okay.
And it's clear that she did not lose her balance.
Right. You know, again, they're trying to point toward different camera angles. I've looked at different camera angles.
This morning, Alila Everett, the track star at the center of that viral video showing her appearing to hit another runner in the head with the baton, is speaking out.
I would never do that on purpose. That's not in my character.
Everett says the incident is a complete misunderstanding, pointing to another angle of the race as proof.
The baton was literally, like, her arm was literally hitting the baton like this until she got a little ahead and my arm got stuck like this.
Yeah, I mean, nice try, right?
Yeah.
Tucker, the victim, I mean, if you see the video, it shows her kind of staggering and she falls down. And then they find out, you know, the medical personnel get there and they say that she has a concussion. Now, she's been charged with assault. This is a misdemeanor assault charge, assault and battery. I don't know what happens with this, but it has drawn a lot of attention. I'm a little shocked that she's out there trying to save her reputation because there's just not a whole lot of ways to look at this. I really haven't seen anyone take her side. Have you?
No.
And I'm surprised
because on video.
Yeah, right. Here's one thing that maybe takes away from some of the... the accusations here. These are two young African-American girls. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you something. If there was a white chick involved here, this would be a whole other dynamic. I promise you that.
Well, and it's hard to believe that if you were just losing your balance, you'd hit someone so hard to give them a concussion and knock them out of the race.
Yeah.
I mean, none of it makes sense.
No, it does not make
sense. What she's saying.
Which is why she's now charged with assault and battery, and I'm not sure her attorney's going to let her do any more interviews. All right, I'm going to have, and this is really something I'm looking forward to. I found this article, I think, more than a week ago in the Free Press. I love the Free Press. It's really where they're doing a lot of good journalism these days. By the way, if you go to thefp.com, you're going to find it's not all pro-Trump. Barry Weiss and her team over there, they raised some good questions about a lot of the issues of the day. But Madeline Kearns is one of the reporters, and she wrote on this free speech case about this woman named Rose Doherty. Rose is 74 years old, and they have, and sometimes we don't realize this, and I think it's been exposed a little bit more, Canada, Great Britain, New Zealand, Australia, they have the weirdest, you know, COVID, they were weird, and with the free speech stuff, they have the free speech police. So this is a woman who was protesting abortions. And again, she's 74 years old. She was put in handcuffs and arrested in Scotland last month. And her crime was simply standing outside of a hospital in Glasgow where abortions were performed. And she held up a sign that said, "Coercion is a crime. Here to talk only if you want." That's all she said. And they arrested her.
What?
And, yeah. Well, this is what they do in Great Britain. They feel like you didn't watch, remember I played the audio from Germany, from 60 Minutes.
Oh, that's right.
They're proud of this. They feel these are people who have been empowered to go after folks on social media for hate speech or whatever is deemed hate speech. In this situation, she's standing peacefully. I mean, this is where you want to look at the guaranteed free speech rights that we have here in this country. And I'm not talking about the one that the terrorist at Columbia University is trying to cite, because he should have his ass kicked out of the country. And I think that's what's going to happen. But in this case, it is outrageous. And Madeline's not the only person who's having this happen to her. So, I'm sorry, Rose. Madeline is the author, Madeline Kern. She'll join us right after Sue's news.
Get more at 971talk.com.